1450 AM WKXL, 103.9 FM, 101.9 FM in Manchester. It is Kale and Company, and we are proudly presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. You can give them a call right now, make an appointment at 603-225-7988. And joining me on this edition of Kale and Company is the executive editor and podcast host at a terrific website, SoxProspects.com, Chris Hatfield. And Chris, we welcome you to Kale and Company. Great to have you with us.
Hey, it's great to be back on with you, Ken. Always good to be back on, back up in the 6-0 as well.
There you go. And as we speak, of course, we are right smack in the middle of a Major League Baseball lockout. Are you concerned, Chris, that this might impact the start of spring training and beyond?
You know, I don't think we're going to, you know, I was talking with, of all people, my mom last night, who was asking about it, and she said, you know, she heard that they were going to lose most of the season or something like that. I don't think it'll get that far. I think both sides are way too incentivized to have games, to get back on the field, to have paying fans, especially after, you know, whatever we're going to call the 2020 season. And even last year, a lot of teams didn't have fans until a couple of months into the season. So that those revenue streams were down. I think the you know, both the owners and the players are going to have a lot of incentive to get back out there on the field, playing games in front of fans and on TV. So I don't think we're going to get that far in, but that said, there are certainly some crucial, you know, financial base, you know, setup of the game type things that the players and owners need to figure out. As fans, we obviously think a lot about the on-field type things, universal DH, are they going to put in a pitch clock or any of these sorts of things. But honestly, the bigger deals are these financial issues. You know, do the players want to try and get rid of a year of arbitration, a year of team control, or, you know, one less year before you hit arbitration, things like that. You know, with the way the revenue stream is starting to slant towards the owners, the players are really incentivized to dig in here, honestly, after being asleep at the wheel for a couple of CBA negotiating seasons. So I think we're going to see some digging in. I don't think it's going to be anything that's resolved in the very near term. Might we have spring training start a little bit late, potentially? Because I think that's what the players are going to need to get the owners to try it, to start to really be incentivized to make a compromise and make a deal. But at the same time, I'd be very surprised if we lost much, if any, of the regular season.
Yeah, Major League service time before being able to become a free agent is certainly a major issue. How do you think that can be resolved?
I mean, it's tough for me because when I look at the issues on the table, that to me as a neutral, yes, fan, but even just as a person on the outside looking in, when you look at how the financial system is set up, I just don't. There's not a whole lot for the players to give on. So that's why I think it's almost a certainty that we're going to see expanded playoffs, because it's one of the few things that the owners want, the players can pull as a lever to give to the owners as a compromise, right? So I think that that's almost a sure thing. I don't know if it winds up being that they take a year off. I know the owners had come out with this, oh, everybody reaches free agency at age 29 type thing or something like that. But the problem is, with that is that the number of players who that actually winds up affecting is quite small. And what you wind up getting is teams get 8, 9, 10 years of control of the Fernando Tatises of the world. So I can't imagine that that's something that happens. I think the players are going to have to settle for incremental progress on these types of things, because they're not going to make great sea change in one, you know, CBA from last year, or from the last CBA and the year before, when their focuses were on things like getting a row of seats on the bus and spring training to themselves. You know, I think they're really just going to have to recalibrate to kind of say, all right, do we want to try and get the free agency 1 year sooner? Do we want to try and get arbitration 1 year sooner? They've said they'll never settle for a salary cap. I think a salary cap based on revenues in the game split at a certain percentage between owners and players would be a good way to make sure they're getting their cut of the pie. But for some reason, they seem not to be interested in it. So, you know, it is kind of funny this time of, you know, every 4 years, this time of the offseason, we all turn into labor lawyers and the like. But, you know, I'm very intrigued to see what progress, if any, they can make. Apparently, MLB took a lot of the on-field game rules changes off of the table recently, which seems strange. strange. I mean, if you make progress on the big stuff, I don't see why you couldn't then say, like, hey, everybody kind of loves the pitch clock. It makes the game run go quicker and there's less dead time. Can we all agree on this? Cool. Okay, next item. Like, I don't see that as being an impediment to the CBA, but I don't know. Maybe it's a negotiating tactic. Who knows? But hopefully, like I said, I'd be very surprised if it really goes that far as such that the season is threatened. But, you know, I think there'll be some digging in, and we'll have to see just how much each side wants to dig in and how much change they want to make in one offseason.
Of course, all transactions now have come to an end until the lockout is over. What were your thoughts on the free agent signing flurry prior to the start of the lockout?
Well, generally for baseball, it was a good thing, right? I mean, yeah. You know, generally baseball in the offseason, the offseason tends to be so slow, especially recently, right, where you would have these teams just waiting and waiting and waiting to sign these guys, and it was just nothing happened. You know, it was the cold stove. It wasn't the hot stove. So it was a nice change of pace for the game. You know, that said, obviously now they're going to lose all of that momentum. I guess technically non-40-man transactions can happen, so you're seeing things like minor league free agent signing. But, you know, I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of really super headline-grabbing transactional work happening by major league teams at this point. It was good for the game. You know, as for the Red Sox, I'm sure we'll get into, it's very interesting. I think it's very much still a work in progress. We're going to have to wait and see how these things play out. One of the interesting things coming out of the lockout is based on when it is, are we going to see another real flurry of transactions as guys try and find homes? You know, you still got Chris Bryant, Kyle Schwarber, Seiya Suzuki from Japan, Carlos Rodon, you know, guys like that are still out there. There's a lot of interesting names. The Athletics seem poised to trade everyone on their roster with any value. You know, how will that play out? Will the Red Sox get involved in that? What teams will get involved in that? There's a lot that's still left to happen. And if we get to a point where the CBA gets signed, it was just show and go on spring training. We're going to see it again. I think that could be good for the game. Now, people saying that there should be like an arbitrarily enforced transaction deadline for the offseason to artificially make that happen. I don't know that I agree with that, because now then you're going to have the owners incentivized to wait to the last minute to try and get better deals out of the players. So I don't know if that would necessarily be a good thing. I think it's just, you know, what happens naturally with this kind of an off season where you have, you know, the entire winter. But it certainly was great to see for the game, and generally it generated a lot of buzz for a lot of teams. Now, I also kind of have I think it's a conspiracy theory, but I think I have, you know, a theory that shared with my podcast co-host Ian Kundle, that I do think MLB may have told some of the teams that have not spent in past years to spend money before the lockout for PR purposes. I kind of hope that's not the case, but it wouldn't surprise me if that's what happens. But, you know, hopefully this is something that happens into the future instead of the, you know, the glacial pace of the last couple of offseasons transaction-wise.
Our guest is the executive editor and podcast host at SoxProspects.com. Chris Hatfield, and the Red Sox made some news by signing a few veteran pitchers and made a deal with Milwaukee, trading Hunter Renfroe for Jackie Bradley Jr. and a couple of prospects, or are they suspects? What do you know about the prospects that they got, Chris?
Sure, yeah. So it was Renfroe for JBJ, of course, who fans, they know. We don't need to talk about Jackie, although he's coming off a pretty brutal year at the plate. I think the Red Sox might be banking a little bit on some recovery from him offensively. But the players they got were a third baseman named Alex Benelis and a shortstop named David Hamilton. Benelis was drafted in the third round of this summer's draft out of Louisville. Has said recently that he did talk with the Red Sox a fair amount of pre-draft, so he's someone they were familiar with. Big power guy, generates big exit velocities, and hit for a pretty good amount of power in his short time as a pro after signing. And he only, you know, got into about 40 games or so because of, you know, when he wound up signing and how much of the season was left after he, you know, do the intake, do physicals, you know, ramp the guy up and then get him into games. But big power guy, question about whether he stays a third or not. He's not great over there. We think it's more likely, based on reports and based on the video we've seen, that he moves either to first or perhaps left field. So it doesn't seem likely that he'll stay a third, but, you know, they'll start him at third base and see where it goes from there, most likely coming into this year's first organization and his first full pro season. is the other thing too. We have them ticketed, I think, for High A Greenville, which seems about right, which is going to be an absolutely loaded, fun roster to watch. I mean, you know, 1 through 9 and their lineup, they're going to be pretty interesting with a couple of really interesting guys in the rotation as well. The other guy, David Hamilton, middle infielder, ton of speed. I think he was top 5 in the game in stolen bases, or in the minor leagues, at least in stolen bases last year. So he can really move. That's an element the Red Sox don't have a ton of in their farm system in terms of base stealing ability. So he's interesting in that sense. The question, I think, is whether, you know, how much is he going to hit? It's definitely hit over power right now. Not a ton of pop, but, you know, will he be able to get on base enough to let the speed play? We've got them both ranked in the top 30 in their initial entry into our rankings. I think we have Fenelis at 18 and Hamilton at 26. But for those who are kind of, you know, not really excited about that, this really seems to be another indication of what Chaim Bloom values is depth. He loves building this minor league depth. And when you make a deal like this, you make a bunch of deals like this, you don't need every player to hit at the plate with a bat sense, but in the, you know, entering the system and sort of popping sense. If you look at the Andrew Benintendi trade last year, they got five guys, including Franchi Cordero, right? Josh Winkowski is a borderline top 10 prospect for them now. And he alone, you look at it as 2 years of Benintendi versus, you know, 6 years of control of Winkowski potentially. Do you need, you know, you don't need a whole lot out of the rest of the guys in the trade to make that a worthwhile move. You know, Franchi Cordero, we saw what happened with him. He didn't really stick. I'm skeptical about his ability to get back up to the majors and contribute meaningfully. But, if you can get a Winkowski to be a win, in terms of an acquisition, maybe a better term than hit it, to avoid confusion. That's something that Bloom clearly values, building depth. And I think we're going to, at some point, see him start to trade from that depth. I mentioned the Athletics. Do they go out and get a Chris Bassett to fill out the rotation if they don't get Carlos Rodon, who they're rumored to be interested in? I don't think they'll get a Matt Olson because they've got Tristan Casas waiting in the wing. But, you know, I think we're going to start to see them use that depth. We saw them trade Aldo Ramirez to get Kyle Schwarber last year. That was a move that, the year before, if they had traded a pitcher of Ramirez's caliber, would have really hurt. But with how much depth they had built, it didn't hurt quite as much. And I think we're going to see him start to tap into that a little bit more as that depth gets built to build the major league roster and fill holes where they might have them.
Well, let's take a look at some of the, you mentioned the player they acquired in the Andrew Benintendi trade, Winkowski. Mm-hmm. Josh is now the 13th ranked prospect at SoxProspects.org. The number one prospect you just mentioned, Tristan Casas, made quite a contribution to Team USA in 2021, spent some time in Portland and in Worcester, and most recently in the Arizona Fall League. So what is his projection for 2022?
We've got him starting in Worcester, but he's going to be up, presuming everything goes to plan and there's no, you know, big injury or something like that. He's going to be up in the majors at some point. He's just too good, I think, to stay down in AAA for the entire season. A potential impact bat at first base, who could also field the position, you know, pretty well for a guy who moved there as a pro. I don't know that he'll be necessarily a gold glover, but he should be able to handle himself at first base pretty well. But a potential really special impact bat, I think, who you could see hitting in the middle of the order. You know, if not this year, then certainly not too far down the line. There's a good amount of power yet that honestly he hasn't really gotten to in game yet, but he's just a very cerebral hitter. He goes up there, he's willing to make adjustments. He works on his craft. You know, he's not just going up there trying to hit dingers, right? He's up there, you know, with a plan, with an approach at the plate. He'll go up with 2 strikes. And choke up and crouch down. I mean, people, you don't have to be a scout to notice it. You know, we have folks who post on our forum over at SoxProspects.com and they'll see one game in New Hampshire, say, at Manchester,
yeah,
with the Fisher Cats when he was in town, and say, oh yeah, he does this thing where he crouches with 2 strikes and chokes way up on the bat. But he can see, it's not like he's really sacrificing a lot. I've seen him go oppo for, you know, doing that if he gets the right pitch, but he's up there looking for his pitch. And this year, early in the year, struggle may not have been the word, but really wasn't getting to a lot of power. And from what we understand, he was working on some things with his approach, trying to figure out, you know, what pitches he can let go and what pitches he can drive. Because at that level of the game, you're not up there swinging at strikes and not swinging at balls. It's not necessarily that simple. When you're up there with those strikes, you want to find the pitch that you can hit above 550 feet, right? And he's learning how to do that. And I just see in him a potential special bat. There's a reason he's a consensus top 30, top 20 prospect in the game right now. I think for a long time he wasn't getting credit because he's a first baseman, and there's a higher bar for what those types of guys have to do with the plate, honestly, in the major leagues. But I'm really excited about what he's going to be able to contribute at the major league level. Like I said, I think you see him, if all goes about what I would expect it to, roughly midseason, a lot of that is going to have to do with what happens with Bobby Dalbec and what else they do with that position. If Dalbec is raking and there really isn't an opportunity, yeah, maybe he stays in the minors a little longer and the clamor will start to get him up to the majors. If Dalbec has a first half like he did last year, maybe we see him up before the break. Who knows? But a lot of that's going to have to do with opportunity more than, or just as much as what he does in AAA. But we're going to see him before too long, and I'm really excited about what he brings to the table.
Yeah, and he certainly opened a lot of eyes on the international scene with his play in the Olympics. So,
and the best, you know, Ken, the best part of that, too, is that when Team USA won silver at the Olympics, he was pissed. He was not happy with the silver. He was quoted as saying he was really disappointed. I love that.
Yeah,
that's what I want to hear, man. Like, he was out there saying, I was here to win gold. I didn't come to Japan to win silver. So, I love the mentality there. That's a big part of why we really like him.
Absolutely. Number two prospect is shortstop Marcelo Meyer. He was selected in the first round by the Red Sox in 2021, one of the highest picks they've had in a while. And had some experience in rookie ball this past summer, just 19. So it's going to be a while before he gets to Fenway.
It is. But honestly, Ken, you know, if you had him number one in the system ahead of Costas, and in fact, you know, of our ownership at the site, we're not in complete agreement about the top prospect in the system. James Dunn, one of our co-owners, has Marcelo Meyer number one. And I wouldn't argue too vociferously with that if you wanted to have Meyer ahead of Costas, and that after all the good stuff I just said about Costas. You know, with Meyer, honestly, even at the number four pick, we think that the Red Sox probably got the top player in this year's draft. Just because of the way things shook out, which is part of why the MLB draft is a little weird. But, you know, a guy who looks like he's going to stay up the middle, one of the best defenders in the draft, you know, certainly has to work on some things before a guy coming out of high school in California. Looks like a guy will stay at short and has the potential to maybe not a five-tool guy. He's not necessarily a burner, but a potential really good four-tool player who could potentially give you an above-average to plus hit tool. The power tool might get to above average or maybe even plus. Who knows? It's tough to project guys who are that young. And like I mentioned, there's no reason to think he can't stick it short. You know, as a high school guy, we've got him going to low A Salem to start this year. But if he's hitting and if he's playing well, he's a guy who could potentially move pretty quick. I think you could be looking at a 2023 arrival if everything goes perfectly according to plan. But really just a potential special player. They love his makeup. That's something that Paul Toboni and the amateur scouting group at the Red Sox really values is player makeup. And they think they've got a really special kid here in Meyer in that sense as well. So, you know, we on the front of the website, we say late 2024 as a way to kind of hedge the bet. But if he got up in 2023, that would be a best case scenario for a guy who looks to be a potential special player. But we just have to see more of him on the field. He had a very short debut, but in I got the stats up here now, 26 games, 275 with a 377 on base and a 440 slugging. Can't ask for a whole lot more out of a kid in his first baseball, even stole seven bases on eight attempts. So really great addition to the system, the type of blue chipper that the system hasn't really been able to add out of the gate necessarily in a while. Although I think the guy we may talk about next, if I know where you're going, is a guy who got there eventually. But they took advantage of having a great pick there that they certainly hope they're never going to be able to get again, or at least in a long time, have the fourth pick again. But a type of blue chipper that they haven't been able to add in a long time, and a player that fans can get excited about if maybe they need to be a little bit patient for his arrival at Fenway.
Well, that was a good tease, Chris, because that's where we're going next. But we have to take a quick break right here. Chris Hatfield is with us, the executive editor, podcast host from SoxProspects.com here on Kalen Company at 1450 AM WKXL, 103.9 FM, 101.9 FM in Manchester, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers and Weed Family Automotive of Concord. 1450 AM, WKXL, 103.9 on the FM dial, 101.9 in the Manchester area. Kale and Company, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord, weedfamilyautomotive.com. Chris Hatfield here, executive editor and podcast host for SoxProspects.com. We've talked about the top prospect, Tristan Casas, and the number two prospect, although you could argue he might be number one, Marcelo Meyer. Number three on your list currently is a second baseman, Nick York, first-round pick in 2020, who spent last season in A and high A baseball.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and really, he was our offensive player of the year, and it wasn't close. Across two levels, he had, if the numbers here I've got are the joint numbers, which I think they are, 325, 412, 516. Mm-hmm. In his first taste of pro ball as a true 19-year-old. You know, when he got promoted up to Greenville as a 19-year-old in 21 games, 333, 406 on base, 571 slugging for a guy who, you know, power was one of the things that there were some questions about when he came into the system. A guy who the Red Sox took a lot of flack for selecting in the first round in 2020, Ken, right? I think on the broadcast, was it Harold Reynolds who said he'd never even heard of this guy? This is crazy. If you knew a little bit more about things, it wasn't as crazy as that broadcast made it seem. Tim Corbin, the head coach at Vanderbilt, said that he thought that York might have had the best hit tool of any high schooler in the country, at least in the western part of the country. And he showed that in his pro debut. He even started off a little bit slow and still wound up with those great numbers. So he just had a tremendous season at the plate. To show that the Red Sox were right drafting him in the first round. I mean, look, if the Red Sox had a second round pick in 2020, might they have gambled that he would last till the second round? I think they probably would have. But I think when they didn't have the second round pick, they said, you know, damn the torpedoes, we're picking him. He's the guy that we have as the best available player, and we're going to take him. And man, he just looks like a potential impact bat in both terms of average and like I said, better power than a lot of people thought he might have, especially this early on. I've got some questions about where he's going to be at defensively. He might be able to stick at second. He's certainly not going to be a gold glover there, but he showed some aptitude for the position. I think there's a chance he maybe winds up in left. He's kind of a short squat type body. We've got him listed at 6 feet, 200. Kind of an athletic, sturdy frame is how our physical description report on him starts, which I think is about right. You know, he actually lost 25 pounds between his draft year and his first pro season. And he came into, I think when he showed up at the alternate training site for a couple of weeks back in 2020, if everyone remembers, that bit of what'll turn into baseball, you know, miscellany, I think down the line. Just looked completely different than he did when he was drafted. And he came into camp in great shape last year as well. Certainly a guy who's going to put a lot of work in the offseason. And that's a good thing because I think he's going to have to wash his body. But if he's going to keep putting the work in, then it's great. And so I don't know really what else you could have asked for out of him. We've got to project that he might be a guy they pushed to double A to start this year, which is pretty incredible considering he's going to be 20 all year in our projected rosters. I think we've got him starting in Greenville just to be safe. I don't think Portland is out of the question. I think part of it might just be a depth thing where, you know, Hamilton, the shortstop they just acquired, is probably ticketed for Portland. Christian Koss and Cameron Cannon were the middle infielders on last year's Greenville team. They'll be starting in Portland. Probably a little bit safer to start him in Greenville this year, but I'd honestly be more surprised if he didn't get to Portland this year based on what he did last year and early at that. So, you know, potential to move pretty quickly. I don't know that I'd be making room in Boston for him quite yet, but it may not be before long before we're talking about when is York going to make his debut. And from a guy who there were questions about when they drafted him a year and a half ago, that's a pretty incredible rise. And he's proven Paul Toboni and the Red Sox amateur scouting guys correct in having confidence in him to take him 17th overall in 2020.
Well, the number four prospect saw some time with the Red Sox last season, Jarren Duran. And where does he fit in 2022?
It's kind of crazy to think, you know, last year we were thinking they should have been giving him a full-time job by the end of the year. And now he doesn't have one going into 2022, right? You know, Duran, I think, has to show more at AAA. He got his cup of coffee and struggled, which is by no means a death sentence for a guy. The gap between AAA and the majors based on everything you read and guys who've made the jump, is as big as it's ever been. You've got every pitcher throws mid-90s, it seems. You know, teams are starting guys for five innings and then come bringing in a course of four or five guys out of the bullpen, blowing smoke and or with plus-breaking stuff. It's difficult to hit at the major league level for a rookie right now, and we've seen that with everyone who came up, even guys like Wander Franco, the consensus best prospect in the game. He struggled initially when he came up. He adjusted quickly, but that's why Wander Franco is Wander Franco, right? I'm not necessarily down on Duran, but I think we saw some things that we at the site were sort of warning folks about. First of all, his defense in the outfield is not ready for prime time, and I'm not sure he's going to prove to be a center fielder, you know, down the line. He's got all kinds of speed, and that's great, but he needs a lot of work still on his reads and his instincts in the outfield, and I kind of wonder whether he might be more of an Andrew Benintendi left fielder type in the majors, where it's not like he's, you know, Manny Ramirez out there, but, you know, it's a best fit in left where he'll be a pretty good, he could potentially be a pretty good defender out there, but you can stretch him to being a center fielder when you need him temporarily, but not a guy you want out there full time. And the other thing, honestly, while he put up great numbers in AAA, one thing we learned about that new park in Worcester, which while it's beautiful for the folks listening, if you're, you know, driving distance from Worcester, go check out that park. It's terrific. They did a great job with it, which, you know, when you've got Dr. Charles and Janet Marie Smith, that's really no surprise. But there was a thing that we called it, the park's called Polar Park, and we called it the Polar Vortex out to right field, where the way the park was constructed, there was a jet stream that if you elevated the ball to right, it would carry out. And I think a lot of Duran's 16 home runs, look, he's got legit power. That's for sure. But I think the park did play a lot to that. He had pretty big home road splits, and we kind of saw that play out at the majors, where when he didn't have Polar Park, he did struggle a bit in hitting for power. He was doing a lot of searching for his swing. You know, we might have talked in the past about how he completely remade his swing in 2020 at the alternate training site on his own. That wasn't the thing the team had him do. But he knew he had to hit for a little bit more power after struggling in Portland in 2019, and he adjusted, and good for him for doing that. But I think he's still kind of searching for what his approach is going to be. He would go from a high leg lift to just a toe tap, moving his hands around. And when you're doing that at the major league level, you're going to struggle. So I think if I'm the Red Sox, I'm sending him to Worcester and I'm saying, look, don't worry about when you're going to get back up to the majors. We still believe in you. Figure out what you're swinging, what your approach is, and then we'll talk about the major leagues, because you can't be doing that at the major league level. And once he gets that locked in, where he's hitting both at home and on the road and closing up a bit of a hole up in the zone that he was getting exploited in the major leagues, then we'll figure out your role at the major league level. But just relax, figure yourself out, use this development time. We can hold it down to the major league level. We don't necessarily need you to come up right away. But when you figure that out and there's an opportunity, we're going to go to you. And I think a little bit more development time will do him good. Am I giving up on him yet? No. So I think he got a little overhyped last year when he was putting up those great numbers in Worcester. Yes. Not his fault, not the team's fault, but I think we need to temper our expectations a little bit. There's potentially a regular there, but he's going to need to finish his development a little bit before he becomes that.
Do you think he has any future at all at second base? I know I saw him play second base in the minors.
Yeah, he was drafted as a second baseman. The thing, Ken, with that now is the last time he played second base was 2018 in Lowell. And now if you've got a guy who's been focusing on playing the outfield for half of 2018, all of 19, 20, and 21. I'm a little slow to then move him back to second. And look, I get that there's no real clear second baseman at the major league level right now, right? Like, Kike Hernandez looks to be in pencil in center field right now. Now if the Red Sox sign another outfielder and Jackie Bradley recovers, does he start playing more second base? Maybe. Christian Arroyo I really like, but he just can't stay healthy. I mean, he's never stayed healthy in his career. I get the inclination to ask about it, but it's not like you don't have Nick York too far behind him. It's not like you don't have Jeter Down, our number five prospect, who plenty of questions about him as well, as I'm sure we might get into. You know, Jeter Down was very up and down this year. Didn't have a great year in Worcester. I think he started pressing a bit. Had a great start to the Arizona Fall League, but then faltered after a really hot five or six games. He went like 0-for-18. So there's still plenty of questions about Jeter Downs, but Downs is there too if he puts it together for second base. I'm just wary of now bouncing the guy around and making him do both. Now, does he come out and say, hey, do you want me to start doing some second base again? I'd be willing to do it. Maybe they look at it. I just can't see that being the first choice. out of the gate for Durant just because of how long it's been since he's played there.
Very true. And I echo your sentiments about Polar Park. Beautiful spot if folks haven't had a chance to go there yet. It's built on a very small footprint, really, and I've never seen trains come as close to a baseball park in my life, but it is a fun place to watch a game, and we're so very close to it, so easy to get there, and I hope you can enjoy some games there in 2022. So you mentioned Jeter Downs. He's the number five prospect, part of the Mookie Betts trade with the Dodgers, but 99 games at Worcester last season, only hit 190.
Yeah, he really struggled. There's really no way to put it. And it got worse as the year went on. I think it was definitely a situation where he was pressing and felt some pressure because these guys who struggle, you know, they were the best player on their high school team. And if they went to college, they were one of the best players in their college team. And then they're one of the best players on their low A team. And they just, you know, it takes a while sometimes for these guys to hit points where they struggle. And that's what happened with Downs last year. Did a little bit of a breakup of the season because he played on Team Columbia. He and his brother Jerry, who at the time was in the Red Sox system but got released mid-year, they both played for Team Columbia because they were both born there, or at least his brother. Well, yeah, they were both born in Columbia, technically, so they could play for Team Columbia. But, you know, Team Columbia didn't qualify for the Olympics, so that was just a short stint. But really need to see more from him at the plate. He actually has improved a fair amount in the field where you could see him playing a good amount of short in the majors, which isn't something we would have said when they acquired him, but really struggled as the season went on. Especially, it just got really bad in kind of August and early September. But then in his last 2 weeks, he kind of put it together a little bit and looked like he was settling back in and getting more comfortable at the plate. And then he went to Arizona and in his first, you know, 7 or 8 games had 5 home runs and looked like he was recovering. But then, as I mentioned, hit a big slump in Arizona as well. So he's got to figure out what he's doing at the plate. He's a guy who we've got him number five right now because, honestly, I don't want to ding any prospect too much for 2021. Coming off of a 2020 in which they played no competitive games, even if, like Downs, they were at the alternate training site the entire time that existed for the 3 months or whatever. You know, I don't want to ding a guy too much for last year and their first full season coming out of that, right? But at the same time, if he comes out of the gate and struggles in 2022, he'll just start falling precipitously down our ranking. You know, do I see a mid-year where he's barely hanging on to being a top 20 prospect? Yes. Do I see a mid-year where it looks like he's figured it out and might be knocking on the door of the majors? Yeah, that could happen too. So I think there's a large range of outcomes for a guy in AAA right now. I think part of it is the Red Sox maybe pushed him a little quick to AAA for a guy who had all of 12 games in AA in 2019. You know, should he have gone to Portland for a short stint at the start of 2021? I think you'd be hard-pressed to argue that that would have been a mistake based on how things turned out, right? So maybe a little bit of that is on the organization for pushing him a little hard, but they felt that they really liked the kid. They liked what they saw at the training site. They liked what they saw in spring training. So they pushed him, and he struggled. Struggles can be a good thing if you recover from them. Or maybe this is him, you know, being exposed a little bit. We'll have to see what 2022 shows us, and I don't think it's going to take very long for us to see which it is.
You know, I've only seen him play, I think, 3 times in person, but all 3, he has struggled defensively. Maybe I just hit some bad nights. I don't know. But he seems to have struggled defensively quite a bit.
No, I mean, he certainly did at some points last year, and I think when you struggle at the plate like he did, I don't know when you caught him in terms of part of the year, you certainly can carry that into the field. And part of that is the mental development of these players. And that's something he's got to work on, you know, working to get yourself out of those slumps, working to leave a bad at bat in that at bat, not carrying it over into the next at bat, the next game, the next chance you have at short, the next chance you have at second. It was a little bit of both. I guess there were times when he showed, yeah, maybe he's got the aptitude to handle short that we maybe weren't seeing before. But yeah, I think you're right. And it's a good point to make that I probably didn't hit enough mentioning it before. There were some struggles in the field that my theory is that, you know, taking the struggles of the plate out with him to the keystone or to short. And he's got to learn not to do that for sure. So that's a great point.
Chris, hang in there for just another couple of minutes. We want to get to a couple of pitchers on the prospect list, but have to take another quick break. It's Kale and Company at 1450 AM WKXL, 103.9 FM, 101.9 FM in Manchester. Presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. Welcome back to Kale and Company. Our guest today, Chris Hatfield. He is the executive editor and podcast host for SoxProspects.com. And Chris, before we talk about a couple of pitchers, tell us how we can get those podcasts.
Sure, yeah. It's anywhere that you listen to podcasts, whether it's Apple Podcasts or on Spotify, Stitcher. We post it to YouTube. And honestly, if you just want the easy way, one easy way to do it is just go to our news page, news.foxprospects.com. Whenever we post a new episode, we post them on there. So that's an easy way to get all your links and then figure out the best ways for you to listen. But we're on any podcatcher, I think it's technically the term that people might use on their smartphones. Just search for Sox Prospects, all one word, podcast, and you'll find us on there. And it's actually kind of neat, Ken. We just had our 500,000th download, which I was pretty pumped about.
Nice.
That was a pretty great thing. We've been doing it for about 10 years now. So, we're ramping that up. We do, in the off season, I think we're going to try to do two or three a month. It kind of depends on how things are going. You know, we're not necessarily going to force it if there's not a whole lot going on during the lockout. But during the year now, we're up to one a week, basically, barring kind of, weeks where we maybe need to take one off for personal reasons or something like that. But yeah, it's been fun growing that. And then, we've got a great group of supporters on Patreon as well. So if folks check it out and want to support us, they can do it on patreon.com/SoxProspects as well. But I highly suggest people check it out. And then we also have the link to the Twitter, which is Sox Prospects, for the website, and mine is at SP Chris Hatfield. So we always have the links on there as well.
It is a terrific website, has been for a long time. How long has it been around?
Mike Andrews, who's the editor-in-chief, started it in 2003, I want to say. I've been with the site since 2005. It's been an interesting evolution since then. Obviously, we're a different business is maybe one way to put it, but definitely a different operation, maybe is the word I was looking for, than we were back in 05. We get our information from firsthand scouting, from connections within the industry, from talking with, we talked with the team as well. We had Heim Bloom on the podcast last offseason, and we talked to, Paul Taboni, the director of amateur scouting, Eddie Romero, who's one of the VPs, who does a lot with their international group. We've had Ben Crockett on, and we're hoping this offseason to get Brian Abraham on, who followed him as the director of player development. We get guys like Alex Spear from the Globe, Jim Callis from MLB. So we try and cast a wide net on folks we talk to. We're thinking about maybe getting some player interviews on there, but, we just got to figure out a way to do it that makes sense, because those can be hit or miss, to be quite frank. With talking to, an 18-year-old guy who just signed, they're still figuring things out themselves. But it's been a while. We're proud of what it's grown into, and a lot of that's because of folks who have stayed with us for a long time in terms of reading the website and listening to the podcast. So it's pretty great. And if folks listening haven't yet, by all means, join us. We put out calls for emails for the podcast, and I always like to say, look, don't assume that your question is too basic or is a bad question because of the fact that we're maybe talking about the advanced stuff, in terms of player development. If you've got the question, others might have it too. So we like to answer those questions too. So definitely no barrier for entry, we like to think, especially during an off season where, as we've talked about, there's not a whole lot else going on. So, by all means,
I want to get to one pitching prospect.
Sure,
he's not the top pitching prospect on the list, but the number eight prospect or maybe suspect is Jay Groom. It seems like he's been in the organization forever, and yet he hasn't really pitched that much until 2021.
Yeah, I mean, the 2016 first-round pick and got his first taste of AA this past year, which is kind of a crazy thing to think about, right, Ken? But, Groom, some of it's just been bad injury luck. He got drafted in 2016 as a high schooler, so they didn't pitch him that much. In 2017, he didn't pitch all that much because of a couple injuries. Blew out his arm in spring training 2018 and missed all of that year and most of 19. And then 2020, we said he was probably the guy who was hurt most by there being no season, because he just needs innings. Going into last year, we said a successful season for Jay Groom will be staying healthy for the whole year. And he did. He pitched 97, just under 100 innings. Artificially kept his innings down because he took a three-week hiatus in the middle of the year for the birth of his daughter that I think they probably extended a little bit as a way to artificially keep his innings down. Because again, he just didn't have that many under his belt. He's a very different pitcher from what he was when he first signed. When he first came out, it was fastball, curveball, mid-90s fastball, potentially more, with a potential plus curveball. But the curveball hasn't really come back quite yet. You know, the curveball is now more of a four pitch guy. Still working a changeup, working a slider, and just pitches a little differently. But he has some success with that, and really some struggles early in the year, a little bit of rust where he'd throw a couple of good innings and then an inning would get away from him. But he did a better job as the year went on of getting those to kind of not turn into snowball innings. He'd walk a couple guys, adjust, get out of the inning, and did a better job as he went on. Was still striking out a lot of guys in a 3-game cameo in Portland at the end of the year, struck out 26 in 15 and 2/3 innings with 4 walks. Just really put an exclamation point on the end of the year. He'll start the year in Portland, and it's not out of the question that he makes his major league debut this year in what I'm pretty sure is his second year on the 40-man roster. So as good a recovery as you could have hoped for last year. Still needs to keep building on it. He's the potential ace they thought they might have been getting in 2016 when he was a potential first overall pick. I don't know about that, but is he a potential major league starter? Certainly could be. Just needs to continue learning how to pitch with this arsenal and continue watching his body. I mean, he came into this year listed at 6'6", 260. He's not a small guy. He's going to need to continue watching that body, making sure his conditioning is good. But if he does both of those things, he could, like I said, he could certainly contribute by the end of this year in the major leagues in 2022.
And Chris, unfortunately, we only have about a minute left. I wanted to touch on an intriguing story. He's been on the baseball radar for quite some time, even though he's only 18, and that is Blaze Jordan.
Yeah. Blaze Jordan is he's kind of the internet sensation of our system. We've got him ranked 7th in the system. Hit for a ton of power and maybe showed a better hit tool this year than we thought he might have had coming out of the draft for a guy who's famous for hitting these 500-foot moonshots on YouTube as a 15-year-old. Again, a great first foray into pro ball for him this year. Last year, he'll start at low A Salem this year, and we'll see where it goes and see if he can keep showing that hit tool is a little better than we thought coming out of the draft, and whether or not he'll be able to stick at third base or might have to move to first. Certainly plenty of that if he does need to move to first, but maybe showing a little bit that he might not have to move, at least early on in his career so far.
Well, and where do you project him for this season?
We've got him starting in low A Salem, and he got a cup of coffee there last year. He did miss some time for undisclosed reasons at the end of the year, so he only got a couple of games, I think, in Salem. But, so he'll definitely go back there to start this year. But, you know, for his age, he's currently 18, like I think you mentioned, a December birthday. So he's going to turn 20 in actually 6 days here. We're recording this on the 13th, I guess, so maybe 5 days when this runs. But turns 20 on the 19th. He'll be 20 all year. Low A Salem is a great starting point for him. And we'll see where it goes from there.
Chris, as always, the time goes by much too quickly.
Sure.
I appreciate you being with us today. And we'll have you back in the not-too-distant future. And hopefully we'll have some spring training on time.
One hopes, Ken. One hopes. We'll keep the fingers crossed and maybe some toes as well.
Thanks so much, Chris. We appreciate it. Take care. Thank you. Bye-bye. Chris Hatfield, the executive editor and a podcast host for SoxProspects.com. Great website. If you love the Sox and enjoy baseball in general, you want to log on to SoxProspects.com. It's Kale and Company at 1450 AM, WKXL, 103.9 FM, 101.9 FM in the Manchester area, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers. And Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. You can call them for an appointment at 225-7988. Weed Family Automotive and weedfamilyautomotive.com. WKXL NH Talk Radio, talking about what matters to you. We are back, but only for a brief few seconds here at 1450 AM, WKXL, 103.9 FM, 101.9 on the FM dial in Manchester, presented by Granite State Dairy Promotion and your local New Hampshire dairy farmers, and Weed Family Automotive, 124 Store Street in Concord. Thanks to Chris Hatfield from SoxProspects.com. Thanks to him for joining us today on the program. Lots of great guests coming up throughout the week here on Kale & Company, so keep it right here at WKXL. And don't forget all the past programs of the great shows here on WKXL, always available on nhtalkradio.com.